An attack on voter registration volunteers is condemned as partisan violence. The investigations into JEA roll on, and Jaxport gets a big shot of federal funding. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. And you, give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, we'll help you gear up for this weekend's big Jacksonville International Auto Show. All of that ahead, but first, it's Friday, and here to discuss a busy week in the news on this rainy morning, we welcome Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times Union. Good morning.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day to you. Mike Mendenhall of the Jax Daily Record is here.
Good morning, all.
Good morning. John Burr of The Invading Sea.
Nice to be here.
And blogger and regular contributor, Fred Matthews.
Good morning, Melissa.
So good to have you guys. Lots to go into on this Valentine's Day. We'll try to sweeten up some pretty heavy news from the week. Everything from a JEA and Jaxport making headlines to the depressing drumbeat of our high homicide rate. But first this hour, there's local and national outrage over what's being called a partisan political attack. A Jacksonville man who was arrested over the weekend after he allegedly rammed his van through a Republican voter registration tent told police he was motivated by an opposition to the president. JSO says multiple victims scrambled to safety after 27-year-old Gregory Tim drove his van right at them as they were working to register voters. Luckily, nobody was hurt. Now, the deadline to get registered in Florida to vote in the March 17th primary election is coming up next Tuesday. We'll begin the hour with a closer look and your calls at 549-2937. Join us at 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Dan Scanlon, you cover the police here in town. Gregory Tim is charged with 2 counts of aggravated assault, 1 count of criminal mischief, and driving with a suspended license. And police are investigating his motivations.
$500,000 bail, last I heard. He sat there in this two-tone minivan. He watched. He shot video. He drove up. He started talking to two of the volunteers, one of whom was 72 years old, and then apparently at some point put the cell phone down that he was videotaping, jammed the accelerator, and ran through the tent. I did have a brief conversation with the 72-year-old victim who said she was 6 inches away when this van went by and was quite amazed, but police had advised her not to talk at that moment. She still had more stuff to tell them. I don't know what caused this. And then 2 days later, when because everybody had video of this van, everybody had a description, they found him. He willingly showed the videos to police and said at one point that he had to stop shooting the good part, I guess because he had to drive. I don't know if it was politically motivated. I don't know if he's a Democrat or a Republican hater or if he just was seeking attention, but this could have been horrible for volunteers doing their American duty out there to register votes, Trump or otherwise. As you said, it's everybody's duty to sign up and register.
That's right. Mike Mendenhall, both the local Republican and Democratic parties condemned this attack. The mayor, Senator Marco Rubio, and Senator Rick Scott, even President Trump, tweeted about this attack, calling it a senseless act of partisan political violence, which it seems to be. Although some of these same figures were criticized for painting such a broad brush over the actions of one man, conflating his criminal behavior with partisanship on the part of law-abiding voters.
Yeah, unfortunately, it appears that, you know, there are some attempts to kind of, you know, turn this into a partisan advantage. I know that there were the City Hall actually received some criticism for tweeting out a video of Mayor Curry holding a press conference in solidarity with the local GOP, as well as when Governor DeSantis was here to announce a jobs program for the fintech industry. He criticized the national media saying that the coverage of this didn't quite fit into their narrative. So, I mean, there is a lot of that out there, and it's unfortunate because regardless of party affiliation, this was an attack on human beings.
That's right. Here's a tweet, Fred, from Senator Marco Rubio about this whole attack in Jacksonville. He says, the current level of anger and division in our politics is way too high. Both sides have voices portraying fellow Americans as a dangerous enemy. We are playing with fire. In other words, calling millions of people you disagree with an enemy of the state is a dangerous place for us to be going right now.
Well, I mean, again, when you get to politicians and rhetoric, this they begin to sow the seeds that have already been there for quite some time. And, you know, there's no evidence that this young man had any link to Jacksonville, let alone any party. It just appears to be an episode in crazy. Look, we've often had people doing this sort of thing. If you look back in time, here in Jacksonville, Lloyd Pearson, who spent most of his life registering voters, was assaulted down in Hemming Plaza, just sitting there at the table. Somebody came by and whacked him across the head just for being there and doing it. This is not new business. The only difference is the people who assaulted Lloyd were from Jacksonville. This guy is not. And all of this partisan, hand in arm is interesting. It's nice, but it is really not relevant to the issue at hand. We have a crime that obviously was committed by somebody who is obviously not well balanced.
You know, this is not a partisan issue. Who's going to support people driving into tents and trying to kill people? I mean, this young man is obviously disturbed. He was videotaping this for ostensibly to get to put it on social network. There's no way anybody can find any positive in this. And it's not partisan.
Right. I think at the same time, it's reflective of how polarized we are politically right now, and how tense the environment is right now.
Of interest, the procedure in the city here is you usually get a police report requested from the sheriff's office, and it's heavily redacted these days with Marcy's Law for privacy reasons. The GOP party actually released a mostly unredacted version of the narrative before we could find another copy of it. So they released it, showing what he was telling police, showing that he was against Trump, showing that he wanted to do this. So they released the information, and if you were quick enough to get on Twitter, you found it. We found it. We started using it. Then the report became available in the court system. Mm-hmm. Also, so the GOP was playing in getting out the information, and then comes the statement from their own local chairman saying that it's high time the national media begin to act responsibly in this case and call this deranged criminal's attack what has been clear and obvious assault motivated by blind rage towards President Trump.
Yeah, and that's from the chairman of the local Republican Party.
That's from Dean Black, chairman, who has been tweeting this all weekend long.
Okay, at the same time, here's an email from Andy in Neptune Beach. The local Republican Party is milking this attack for all it's worth. I wish they would get just as upset by the constant mass shootings in this city. We've also gotten emails from listeners pointing out that not here in Jacksonville, but in other places around America, people wearing red MAGA hats, Make America Great Again hats, have been assaulted out in public by other Americans who don't like the hat and what they believe it represents. And so, you know, I think it's appropriate to have a discussion about the fact that political violence, which some blame actually on President Trump, and some would say that that is simply not the case, political violence is unacceptable. It's simply unacceptable. And we have to constantly bring everyone back to our values as Americans. The rule of law, civil disagreement, Mike, these are, if we lose sight of that in this country, we are in a very dangerous place.
Yeah, you mentioned the MAGA hats. I mean, there are some people that look at it as a symbol of hate. There's others that look at it as a form of symbol of political expression. It doesn't matter how you view that. I mean, physical attack on anyone. I mean, it could be somebody who's, you know, walking down the street, you know, with a t-shirt on that says Hillary Clinton for president. I mean, it would be, you know, any type of physical violence against somebody for expressing a form of political opinion is wrong. Any type of attack against a human being unprovoked, not in self-defense, is wrong. So I mean, it needs to be separated.
And someone was actually attacked this week. I saw it in a Twitter feed just because they were wearing a red hat, and I guess someone thought it was a MAGA hat and they hit them. So that has to stop. Let's hold a debate. let's talk about it. Grab a cup of coffee or a beverage of your choice and sit down and talk about it. There's obvious differences. And as a police reporter, I'm covering a lot of differences that end up in death, and I'm getting tired of it.
And this is also an opportunity for our political leaders to stand up and make that point and say, you know, an opportunity for President Trump or for, you know, a national Democratic figure to say it's not right to attack people physically attack people of a different political persuasion.
It's not right to attack people, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
But but unfortunately, we're in a time, and we've elected a president that encourages this kind of activity, either by insinuation or by outright words. And that's the difference of where we are now. That's the difference between this president and, of course, the 42 that preceded him, and particularly the one that preceded him in the 8 years prior to this, who took a great deal of heat, who took a great deal of ostracization. Many folks didn't believe he was going to get elected. When he got elected, they said, oh, goodness gracious, this guy actually got elected. And then he got elected to a second term. And this is the backlash of that. Make no mistake about it. And we're going to have to live with this. And if he gets reelected in November, then that means that it's all been sealed up. Apparently, most of America will love it. But that's the time that we live in. We need not dodge the bullet. When a guy tells you that he can stand on Fifth Avenue and shoot someone and nothing will be done about it, and we elect him president, what do you expect is going to happen?
And how far we've come from 2008, when you have a presidential debate going on, and Senator John McCain, when he was running against President Obama in 2008, famously halted a supporter from of verbal attack, a cultural attack against President Obama, calling him calling his opponent a good and decent human being, and
who he just had disagreements with.
And that, I mean, I find it hard to believe that we would see that in today's political discourse.
That is the sad fact. And we have some calls expressing different points of view on this. Richard is on the north side. Go ahead, Richard.
Hey, I was just on that comment right there where you guys are talking about John McCain. Fred said it perfectly. There's never this level of anger or hatred. I mean, it expressed from the political, the candidate side, until Trump started saying things like, go ahead, hit him, I'll get you out of jail. That situation that you were talking about with McCain in 2008 was because McCain obviously saw the danger of allowing that type of rhetoric to continue, and he stopped it in his tracks. And if you remember, Trump hated McCain and even despised him in his death. So it's not sort of balanced. What we're doing right now is the mere fact that we're saying there must be an opposing point of view. No, there shouldn't be an opposing point of view. If I say the sky is blue, the opposing point of view is not, no, it's not. So we're so far off the rails that we think just because we oppose something now that it brings some sort of balance to it. We're way off the rails, and unfortunately, it's only going to get worse. And that's all I have to say.
Okay, Richard, thanks for that. Ed is in Orange Park. Hello, Ed.
Yeah, I have like a little issue here. I mean, the idea that the reason why people who are simply walking around the street or going to church or going to shopping or going to a restaurant or having a drink at a bar or going to school are getting attacked for wearing something perceived to be conservative or pro-Republican or pro-Trump is because of Trump is ridiculous. You would think if Trump was encouraging violence, the people getting attacked would be people who are anti-Trump, the people wearing the Bernie shirt, the people wearing the AOC hats. That doesn't make any sense at all. Now, you can pinpoint and say Charlottesville, which was horrible by a pro-Trump supposedly a supporter. You can also say that the congressman Republicans who got shot while playing baseball by a pro-Bernie supporter. That is not the questions here. We're talking about simple citizens who are not even in a political situation, just walking around, going to school and shopping and getting attacked. However, you guys in the press can do a little experiment and clear things up for us. Why don't you guys have a few people just dress up with T-shirts and hats, professing some conservative values, you can say MAGA, you can say pro-life, you can say anything like that, and just simply walk around town in the universities, minding their own business, going to have, get a drink, a cafeteria lunch, have another group wearing pro-Bernie, pro-AOC, pro-choice, and do the same thing, and have a third one wearing, let's go to the extreme, pro-communist, hammer and sickle, Che Guevara shirts, I love Lenin, and see which of those three groups get attacked or insulted. And I'm going to bet you it's going to be the Republicans that get attacked. And this is a conservative town. Try to do that in a liberal one.
And you know what? Everybody who got
Thanks, Ed.
Everybody who got attacked under that scenario, it would be wrong, because violence is wrong in any of those contexts.
What about his perspective? He perceives that the attacks are primarily coming toward Trump supporters. That's his perception.
Well, again, using history as a prologue to where we are now, in the height of the time that Bush 2 was in office, and after it was clearly, it was very clear that the war that we've now been engaged in for almost 20 years was perpetuated on falsehoods, there was never the kind of vitriol against the Republican Party that is up now in many circles. There wasn't the kind of vitriol even against that president as it was then. We can go back over decades and you just haven't seen this kind of vitriol and outright anger against a leader and to an extent, by extension, the party that we have now. That's the main difference. And you have to ask yourself, why is this? Why do we have this great divide here? Why do we have article after article of the rise of racism and the rise of white nationalism being put on front pages? And they're on Front Street now. You can click two clicks on your computer and you'll get to their websites that they have. That's the difference that of what's taking place here. And a lot of those things come from the top down. They don't just happen. There's been an okay done. When you have someone who says this about a federal judge, you know, openly and consistently, that they need to do what I say and they should stop doing this. When you have someone, when you have this kind of thing going on, that's what is causing this anger among other folks. There's no doubt that Mr. Stone is going to get Roger Stone is going to get a pardon. It doesn't matter what the sentence is. He's going to get a pardon because he's a great fixer.
Well, wait and see on that is all I would say. we will definitely be watching with interest that story. But let's move on and discuss some more headlines, local ones from the week. If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable and your calls at 549-2937. Now, here's another big story from the week. A special city council committee began its investigation into the JEA scandal. At the same time, on Tuesday, Jack's Mayor Lenny Curry announced seven new appointments to the JEA board. You may recall they all stepped down en masse. I had to get that in there. I wanted to say that for so long. En masse last week or last month. Now, all of this happened even as one city council member tried to push some emergency legislation or a resolution that would give the council more control over appointing those board members. Let us know your thoughts about the investigations into JEA and the leadership there at 549-2937. Mike Mendenhall, you cover city council. The mayor struck out with seven well-respected figures he'd like to appoint to the JEA board. I don't think anyone has a problem with the folks he's selecting. But the question is, should the city council have more of a say in this, given the debacle that we've seen at the utility?
Yeah, and the city council members I talked to, all of them seem to, you know, seem to appear to see that these folks were you know, decent choices to lead the JEA. Councilmember Garrett Dennis has kind of been the one leading the charge on getting the city council to be able to appoint at least three board members to JEA. And he actually had a piece of legislation. It was a resolution. It wasn't binding, but it was that he wanted to get it through council as an emergency on Tuesday night, urging the mayor to take input from city council members for appointments, and the mayor's The mayor's announcement of these names actually came out before they were able to take that vote. When I spoke to Councilmember Dennis, about the picks, he felt that it was premature, that he should have waited till he had heard from all the city council members, as well as informed the city council members that he was going to be making this announcement before it did. It appears that there were a select number of city council members who knew that this was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. So as that's playing out, what about this investigation that city council is undertaking to get to the bottom, as they say, of how this whole privatization process began? They say they're going to go through millions of documents and call people to testify under oath, even though we're hearing, Dan, some people that have ties to this scandal may try to get out of testifying under oath.
Where have we heard that before? I don't know. There is a massive rebuild of public trust that has to go on now, and this investigation is obviously either going to help rebuild JEA as it's getting rebuilt from the inside and outside, or it's going to hurt it even further as we find out more. Remember, there was discussion when the mayor appointed the first round of members, and they were all out of cycle. Some of these JEA board members weren't supposed to be kicked out. They were term wasn't over yet, and he put these people in. Ostensibly, you're right. These names, on the surface, I know a few of them, work with one of them once, disclosure. Mm-hmm. They're good choices. They should go a long way towards restoring public trust, but one of them gave money to the mayor.
Right, which isn't an unprecedented dynamic that we see with these board appointments. And here they are. They're John Baker, a chairman of FRP Holdings, a big donor and businessman, retired lieutenant general from the Army, Joseph DeSalvo, Dr. Zachary Faison, Jr., president at Edward Waters College, Dr. Leon Haley, CEO at UF Health Jacks, Marty Lanahan, bank vice president at Iberia. She's the only female appointee. Bobby Stein, president of the Regency Group, and Tommy Van Osdahl, vice president, Ascension Healthcare. Fred, your thoughts?
Well, of the ones you mentioned, Dr. Faison at Edward Waters College is probably the least political of the appointees. He's just been in town, a year and a half now, mm-hmm. and he doesn't have any real political affiliations that we can point to, and he doesn't really know the personalities that are involved here, so he should come on the board with a pretty clean slate. But as far as his knowledge about utilities and all that sort of thing, he'll have to listen and learn. But that was one of the problems that you had with the prior board. Virtually half of them didn't know anything about utility business and hadn't really run a business to have any input, so they were totally dependent upon the staff. But as far as the city council's investigation, it's well worth them doing it. But I suspect that as the weeks continue to go on, it'll move from the front page of the Times Union to the B section of the Times Union until finally below the fold, unless they uncover
some explosive new documents.
Something major, because the public has gotten what they wanted, and that's for the sale to be stopped and for the CEO to be gone, and it looks like most of the staff is going to be gone except for Ms. Dykes. And now the union is weighing in.
Melissa Dykes.
Yeah, Melissa Dykes, the current interim CEO.
Interim CEO.
And it looks like the union is weighing in, with what they want out of this deal. So it'll be interesting. They can go through this process, but unless they give us some surprise, tell us who started this, if there's some paperwork there, who put the idea into the CEO's head, we don't have anything.
We also learned from the TU, John, that the former assistant to Aaron Zahn has told the Times Union that Mr. Zahn met with the mayor many, many times, and it was the only part of his schedule he didn't involve her in. So we do know that.
We do know that. Just to kind of talk about the city investigation of the JEA, I really question whether the city council has the firepower to go after these guys. We're talking about a massive investigation. All these city council members are part-time people. This isn't their day job. And I think that's also a problem with the JEA boards. These are all, and have been in the past, people who are very involved in their businesses, and that they're part-time appointees to JEA. And they don't, certainly the JEA boards recently have not had, the time or put in the effort to really scrutinize what was going on. And they fell into a lot of bad holes that were put placed there by Mr. Zahn. You know, I just really question whether, despite their good intentions, and I don't question their good intentions in the city council, but I don't think they have the staff or the time to really go into this.
Well, and the city council members on the committee, actually, some of them feel the same way. I know that Rory Diamond, the chairman of the committee, told me the other day that he doesn't think that the abbreviated time frame they have to do it's going to give them enough time. He said an investigation of this magnitude should take a year to a year and a half. They have until June 30th to produce a report, according to the charge that they were given by the Office of General Counsel and city council president. Now, they could extend that investigation if they find evidence to warrant it. However, that would be up to the next city council president, who is expected to be Tommy Hazzouri. It's unclear where he'll stand on that. Just like Council President Scott Wilson, JEA is consuming his entire tenure as president, and the question for Mr. Hazzouri would be, does he want the same thing to happen to his time? I mean, does he have a different agenda? Things he wants to put forward. So, Randy DeFore, who's another member of the committee, said that she feels like they need some type of an investigator to be hired to assist with both.
Right. Yeah. Just to go through all of the documents, someone who's trained in that, a paralegal maybe.
Yeah. And that's on top of the independent attorney they've hired and city attorneys who will be working on
this. And don't forget, the JEA has a new board coming in. They have to learn. They have to pick a new CEO. It's a whole rebuilding curve on a utility that we don't trust. And I know some employees there. They're not too happy about still right now. So it's a whole new year ahead of us.
Melissa, did I hear correctly that there's a possibility that a Democrat is going to become the next president of city council in a majority Republican city council? They're going to vote for a Democrat, Arlie?
According to Mike Mendenhall, yes.
As of right now, they actually had a notice meeting a few months ago, and he had the most pledges. I mean, they're not binding pledges; they could easily change their minds. But,
and you know, when you talk about a guy like Tommy Hazzouri, I think it's fair to say he's the most well known and probably the most well liked local Democrat in Jacksonville, with a strong bipartisan base of support. And Fred never misses a chance to inject a little satire and humor into these proceedings. And let's go to some calls. 549-2937. Rick is on the north side. Hi, Rick.
Hi. Well, some of you guys have made some of the points I wanted to make. A big one is that there's no way to investigate what happened with JEA without investigating the man who created, orchestrated, sustained, and to some extent still would like to get to, you know, private control of public resources through the JEA. That's Lenny Curry. This can all be laid directly at his feet. He chose cronies for the board, promised them handsome rewards for selling out, and nearly got away with it, in my opinion. I think he would still like to go there, but he's looking now for honest members of the business community to pull his political chestnuts out of the fire by coming and sitting on the JEA board and taking the heat. This guy, you know, probably should resign, in my opinion, and I guess you can take it from there.
Okay, Rick, thanks for that. Should the mayor resign? There have been a few isolated calls for him to do so over this scandal. It's certainly not going to happen. When you talk to the city council members investigating this matter, they've said Rory Diamond, who's leading the committee, has said if the documents lead us to bringing in the mayor to testify under oath, then that's what we'll do.
Yeah, and that's the other thing too. The way that they're having to go about this investigation, because of the timeline, they're actually hoping to hear from a few witnesses first, some executives that already left the utility, before they start piling through these documents. And the documentation, if it does lead back to the mayor's office, that's where you're going to find it is in the paper trail if it does lead back to the
mayor. Here's a tweet from a listener. Someone or some organization in Jacksonville should call for an independent review of JEA and identify other potential risks or ways it might might be used for personal gain versus the public good. Well, you know, there are multiple reviews going on now. There's the city council investigation. There is the city's office of ethics. And then there's the federal probe into this. And I think there's one more out there.
Well, you've got the Hightower group.
And then you've got the advocacy group, OurJax.com, who's essentially coming in pressuring from the outside as well.
Right.
So there are a lot of things moving around this whole affair.
To get to the question of should the mayor resign, knowing what we know as we sit here right now, I would say no. But I actually side with a lot of what the caller said about how the mayor seemed to have set up this whole problem and is trying to get rid of it. Now, as Mike said, if in these investigations there is documentation that shows the mayor was involved in orchestrating with Mr. Zahn hand in glove, and that certainly is a possibility, then yes, he should resign. We're not there yet.
Let's go to Daryl in St. Augustine. Hi, Daryl. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Great show and a phenomenal job of actual media reporting this story. Every one of you guys need hats off to every one of you because, you know, if it hadn't been probably the last time, because they're going to continue to say you're fake news when you're really news. So,
well, thanks, really Daryl. Yeah, we try to. That is our goal always, to report all the news. So thank you.
I know it is. And you've done a great job with this. I mean, you probably could have got overrun 2 years from now, 5 years from now, once they've created more of the fake news BS. But anyway, but does anybody else see a pattern here of Republican administrations trying to get take power and then take the taxpayer dollars for their friends, whether it's the schools that they don't want, they want to take the money and put it into charter schools that are run by who they appoint, whether it's the JEA taking the money and trying to get control for some, they want to sell it out in private. Over and over and over, it's the privatization, quote, is the Republicans' version of redistribution of wealth. The problem is the redistribution of wealth is our wealth, our tax dollars that they're spending for their friends. That's my comment.
All right, Daryl, thanks for that. And I appreciate your perspective on all that. And we've had a really robust look at JEA. But I want to also make a little time for some other stories from the week. Jaxport says it's getting $93 million in federal funding to continue dredging the shipping channel in the St. Johns River down to a depth of 47 feet. This is so the port can attract those bigger cargo ships. But at the same time, environmental advocates say this whole project is only going to make flooding problems worse for this city. John Burr wrote about this in The Invading Sea, which I encourage everyone to check out. As you wrote, John, it's a classic jobs versus the environment struggle.
Yeah, it is. And the only thing I would add to your introduction is there really is no controversy over whether dredging the St. Johns River will make us more vulnerable to sea level rise. It will. And the Army Corps of Engineers has said this much. The only question is how much more vulnerable will it? And, you know, that whole perspective hasn't played into the public discussion of this project at all. And it really needs to be considered. Realistically, the project is now, with this new federal funding, it's going to be about 80% funded, and to stop it it's impossible.
It's not going to stop.
But there are steps that could be taken mm-hmm. to, you know, help the city deal with sea level rise, and money that could be spent and needs to be spent regardless of this dredging project. And if we can move toward that direction, I think, you know, there is a positive here.
Right. As you write, local officials aren't going to speak out against it, given the argument the port is making that it will create thousands of jobs. Some independent estimates of the project have said that those job numbers are probably a little rosier than what we'll really see. But that said, no local officials going to argue against job creation. At the same time, this deeper river channel will basically act like a fire hose to allow more water to flood in from the sea If we have another Hurricane Irma-style event, we could see even more severe flooding, Dan and Mike and Fred, than what we saw after Irma. Let me note, on a January 13 segment of 60 Minutes, a Princeton University geoscientist was talking about the drowning of Venice, and he said that what Venice is seeing now, the Southeast is going to be seeing more frequently, and he name-checked Jacksonville as one of several coastal Southeastern cities that will experience severe flooding every year as sea level rise worsens. Not right away, but it's in our future.
I live in a neighborhood on the south side that was never in a flood zone until Irma. We've had to evacuate for the past two hurricanes. After Irma, during Irma, we flooded. This building here, where we're sitting talking, was almost flooded during Irma. Mm-hmm. John, I'm sure your house was coming close to the water since you lived near the river. Downtown San Marco was flooded. An elderly apartment house complex in San Marco was evacuated the last hurricane because of fears that it would also flood out. And a guy who owned a small apartment complex had sandbagged everything, including his toilet and his shower, to prevent water from flooding up into his complex like it did the last time. Mm-hmm. This is fact. This is happening.
Yeah.
Whatever is causing it, whether it's an ice age that's coming or going or global warming, it is happening from Charleston to Savannah to St. Augustine. These coastal cities are preparing for flooding.
That's right. So picture an Irma-level flooding event every year. The city, I don't think the city is really, even though there's a new resiliency committee at City Hall, Mike, I don't think anyone has fully grasped what this is going to cost over time.
No, and we're at the same time, we're talking about spending hundreds of millions of dollars to deepen the river. We're also talking about hundreds of millions of dollars of development downtown on the riverfront. You've got...
including Lot J.
Including Lot J and possibly the shipyards as well if Shad Khan decides to develop that property. And, you know, yesterday, for example, FIS, which is a global financial technology firm, just received final design approval for their big $145 million headquarters on the North Bank. And one of the things that they had to consider was sea level rise and water coming up into their facility. They actually they're going to be spending extra money for walls and as well as replacing the riprap to any other development that comes right on the St. John's River is going to have to do the same thing.
Fred,
but we're not willing to equate dredging the river to get more shipping jobs and to allow bigger ships to come in. We're not willing to equate that to flooding downtown. We're simply not willing to do that. And the Riverkeeper and others have been arguing against this for almost a decade, and they lost. And it's going to happen. The bigger ships are already coming in. We're proud about this. But, I mean, how many of us actually know people who got jobs working down at the port or down there loading the cranes? How many of us actually know that? And what are the new jobs that are actually coming to town that we are touting to come to town? We don't know about that. We don't know those numbers. But any time you mention jobs in politics, it's a great term. More jobs are going to, more people are coming here. But we simply don't equate that to the flooding downtown. And this administration has not pulled together a plan to tell us how they're going to fight against the next great flood. How long were the businesses, the legal offices out of work after that last flooding of the old Wells Fargo building?
And we're in that building right
now.
Yeah.
How long were they out of there? I mean, how
Three
long
months.
Was hotel out of business? All of that was out of business, but we act as if, oh, well, you know, it just happened. It's no big deal.
Well, that's the thing. I think it's important to know that what we experienced after Hurricane Matthew and Hurricane Irma, we need to get into the mindset that that's going to keep happening and with more regularity.
I'll never forget seeing the St. John's River coming up through manhole covers, mm-hmm. spurting up in San Marco. It's been doing it for years despite the placement of pumps. But for Irma and Matthew, there it was. The actual square started flooding the day before Irma.
Irma was our wake-up call, mm-hmm. and we haven't woken up yet. But we're not alone. You know, this is a problem in cities across the country and cities across the world. There's a lot of things that really need to start happening that aren't happening, not only in terms of resilience, but in terms of the cars we drive and how we generate electric power and all kinds of things that are contributing to global warming. So, you know, we shouldn't feel like, you know, oh my gosh, Jacksonville is so behind the times. We're, you know, we've got to act, but, you know,
We've got a lot of company, in other words.
And you know, as a world, not just as a country, as a world, we've got to come to grips with this and start acting on it.
Thanks for that. Almost to the break, but before we say goodbye to our panel, finally, it's our lightning round where we touch on other stories that might have escaped your attention this week. I'll start. There was a lot of excitement up at the Gateway Town Center on the city's near north side when Winn-Dixie opened a grocery, eliminating a food desert in that region. Publix, you might recall, had pulled out of that grocery location some months back. Winn-Dixie stepped in. So wanted to make a note of it.
Yeah, it's a big event.
Yes.
A grand event.
Dan.
Okay, those of you crossing onto the Arlington Expressway may notice that the end of the Old Town and Country Shopping Center has something happening to it. It is going to be the word Arlington done by separate artists, each letter. And it's going to take a few weeks to get done, but on Wednesday, the letters were already there in purple. Mm. And when the rain leaves, it's going to be really pretty. That's the side of the old movie theater. There used to be other parts there. Maybe there is a renaissance of poor old Arlington happening right now.
Hey.
At least the artwork will look good into the gateway of the community.
All right, Arlington. Mike.
All right, we talked about riverfront development. There is a new proposal down at the former City Hall site that looks like it could get approved. 520 apartments, almost 75,000 square feet of retail, including a possible downtown grocery store, and that'll go before approval soon.
How about that? Fred?
In the spirit of the grand Ken Burns country music special that's on PBS these last few weeks, I want you to name three, and in the spirit of Black History Month, name three African-American country music singers of note.
Charlie Pride.
And?
Etta James, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's not one.
I got Lionel Richie and Ray Charles.
Oh, hey, all right, Fred.
Lionel Richie?
Yes.
Yes, I think that's true. Yeah, that's a good one. Wow. John Burr.
I'd just like to say it's about time, and I'm really happy that Jacksonville is starting to commemorate James Weldon Johnson and his brother John, and both of them phenomenal people who were born and raised in this city, and you know, we're gonna finally make that park into something good in La Villa, and long overdue, but it's great to see it moving forward.
That's right. The city's honoring the Johnson brothers this mm-hmm. month with about the Black National Anthem written by them, Lift Every Voice and Sing, 120 years old this month. So thank you so much, John Burr, Fred Matthews, Dan Scanlon, and Mike Mendenhall. Have a great weekend, guys.
You too.
Thank you.
Speaking of the weekend, in a moment, a ticket giveaway for this weekend's Jacksonville International Auto Show. That's next.
Congaree & Penn offers an elevated farm setting for private events. With all-encompassing farm-to-table culinary service, the farm's acres are a unique backdrop for special occasions. More at congareeandpenn.com.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm. Malignant mesothelioma. Asbestos dust causes this cancer. Learn more from board-certified civil trial specialist Wayne Hogan at waynehogan.law.
On the next Fresh Air...
Long way. Long way, long walk to freedom.
We remember South African songwriter Joseph Shabalala, who led the choir Ladysmith Black Mambazo. He died Tuesday. Also Nick Hornby. His 1995 book High Fidelity has now been adapted and updated for a new Hulu series. Join us
this afternoon at 1 on 89.9 WJCT. let us walk the long way.
In the aftermath of Hurricane Maria, Tesla and Google stepped up to restore electricity and internet service to Puerto Rico, a job the government would usually do. I'm Ira Flatow. This week on Science Friday, we'll talk about how many tech companies have outgrown the tech label and morphed into something larger. The rise of the net state on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon at 3 here on 89.9 WJCT.
It ain't over yet.
98% of people still haven't been heard from. This is going to be a long primary process.
Primaries, judicial politics, and a post-impeachment purge. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's time to catch up on a big and busy week. It's the Friday News Roundup. That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, it's North Florida's largest new car showroom. Yes, the Jacksonville International Auto Show is revving its engine for you this weekend. Now, in a moment, we'll have a ticket giveaway. Very exciting. But first, spokesman Chris Russell is here with a preview of everything you can check out at the Prime Osborne Gearheads. Listen up. Hey, Chris, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
People look forward to this all year. What are the latest and greatest that they're going to see at the auto show?
There is so much to do at the Prime Osborne. It's filled with that new car smell.
Exactly. So literally and figuratively.
Literally and figuratively. So if you enjoy that smell, come on down. There's so much to do for so many different people. So if you're a gearhead, you're going to see a lot of different vehicles that you haven't had a chance to see yet at Jacksonville. The one star car, the one that everybody's drooling about. As the workers were loading it in yesterday, they were admiring this new C8, the Corvette Stingray.
Right.
And
so that's the car to see above all?
That's the car to see above all. I had a request to have a test drive for it yesterday. I said, let's make a snowman contest first before we have that, because it's not going to happen.
Right.
But there are only a few of them in the country. We have the white one. And they began production last week, and they're coming off the line soon.
Oh, wow. Okay, so the Stingray, also the Brumos collection, will be out in full force.
Absolutely. They're a terrific partner. They brought some vehicles from different eras, and they're in the main concourse area, so people can look at that and learn about the new museum as well.
Okay, you can drive the hottest new models from Chevy, Chrysler, Dodge, Fiat, Jeep, Ram, and Toyota. There's a ride and drive event coming up.
Yes, so people bring their license, they sign up, and they can do everything from a Dodge Durango to the Bill Murray commercial, the Super Bowl. Then we have a Jeep Gladiator that you can test drive as well. And usually there's a complimentary gift for participating.
And kids get a free Hot Wheels toy car, which is really cute. So there's stuff going on for kids. Even Peter Rabbit will be at the Jacksonville International Auto Show.
And the Jacksonville Library will be there as well, signing people up for library cards.
Okay, so these are all the 2020 models. This is, you know, for people that love vehicles, love cars, they just can't get enough of this. Why do you think... In America, we still have this enduring obsession with the automobile.
It's part of our DNA. And in Jacksonville, it's part of the culture. And so you've always had automotive as a category that's important. You've got great dealers who are committed to having good dealerships. And so it's just racing, driving. And we see also people not just coming for the gearhead stuff, but also just, I'm looking for a family vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Atlas Cross Sport from Volkswagen. Two years ago, we got the first Atlas in the country coming off the line. This year, we have the next generation of that, if you will, the next iteration. And so people can look at that, get a sense of how these vehicles are evolving.
What's the most requested vehicle, the most popular kind of family vehicle people want to check out? Do you have that information?
Yes, typically the Pacifica.
Really?
That's the one. And actually, you can test drive the Pacifica at the Ride and Drive event as well. That's just one that's won all the accolades. And we don't have the hybrid with us this trip, but there is a hybrid that just came out.
And we were talking about energy efficiency and climate change in the previous segment. Mm-hmm. For people that really want to purchase an electric car, what will they be able to learn at the auto show?
Many vehicles now are hybrid or EVs, and they're getting better with mileage they can do on the charge. So we have everything from like a Bolt, and also now the, this is really exciting, the Porsche Taycan, which is their attempt at Porsche to go after Tesla.
Really?
And we don't have Tesla because we don't have, it's only dealerships at the car show, auto show. So to see this vehicle, this is going right directly after the comfort, the style, the design of Tesla, the S.
Interesting. And you'll even have some classic cars on scene too, which is fun.
Yes.
Right?
If you're an enthusiast for Corvettes and you want to see the C8 on Saturday, come on down. On Saturday, we have the Corvette Circle on the patio and all the enthusiasts get there. They set up their vehicles and there's a little competition, friendly competition on who's got the best vehicle.
Okay. So it's jacksautoshow.com to get your tickets. But if you're listening right now, you're in luck because we have five pairs of tickets to give away to the Jacksonville International Auto Show this weekend at the Prime Osborne Convention Center downtown. If you want a pair of tickets, email us right now, firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We will pick five winners at random and we will give your names to Will Call. So Chris, my email inbox is about to explode.
Fantastic. Also, if you're an active military or first responder today on Valentine's Day, free admission. So come on down, just show your ID, and we will get you inside so you can see all these fantastic vehicles.
That's a good deal. And thank you so much, Chris Russell. Happy Valentine's Day to you. Again, it's jacksautoshow.com for more about this weekend show. And keep those emails coming. We will hand out some free tickets here in just a little bit. Have fun this weekend.
Thank you.
That's our show. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Brady Corum is directing today. Jessica Palumbo is station news director, and our digital editor is Bill Bortsfield. We always value your feedback. Keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And if you missed anything from this morning's show, catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8. Also, make sure to tune in today at noon for our live statewide program, The Florida Roundup, where we take calls from across Florida on the biggest issues around the state this week. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Have a great weekend, everybody. We will connect with you again at 9 a.m. Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.